So we're in Sefer Shmuel, we're still in chapter 1, Parak Aleph. Slowly we're making our way through. The amount of commentary on this parak, in this chapter, is unbelievable. So there's a lot to discuss, and we're only really... There's a drop in the bucket of how much there is in this chapter. So we got to verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Let's go back one verse to Pasuk Yud again, where it says, V'hi maras nafesh, that Chana, who had been teased, who had been upset by Penina, was bitter, matisbalel al Hashem, and she davened to Hashem, or it says al on Hashem, uvacho sitke, and she cried. Vatidor neder vatomar, and she took an oath, and she said, Hashem tzivakot, Hashem, God of legions, imro'o sira ba'ani amasecha, if you'll surely see the suffering of your maidservant, uzechartani, and you'll remember me, lo tishkach es amasecha, and not forget your maidservant, v'nasata l'amoscha zera anashim, and you'll give your maidservant seed of man, unasativ la'ashem, and I'll give it to Hashem, kol yimei chayav, all the days of his life, I'll give him to Hashem all the days of his life, Umora lo yalel rosho, and either a razor or fear, we'll see, will not be upon his head. So we have to take every step of this pasuk, you know, each word one at a time. And we started going through it last week. And we talked about that when she said him ro sire, we said that what she was saying was, if you'll see my merit and see that I deserve to have a child, then good. And if not, then Tira, then you will see that because I will go and seclude myself with a man and be warned by my husband, etc., and basically make myself into a sota and be brought to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, to drink the Mei Sota, the waters of the Sota. And as a result, we know the Torah says that if the woman is indeed innocent, then Venizra Zera, then she will produce a seed, she will have a child. So she said, Hashem, I'll take matters into my own hands, and I will become a Sota and drink the water to produce a child. We mentioned, you know, that there are those who say she didn't really plan to do this, but what she was saying was that I could, and on the merit that I won't, that itself should be a merit for me to have a child. I saw also that some of Farshim, Beis Halevi, and others want to tie this back to the previous pasuk, where it says that Yisfamel al Hashem, and she davened on Hashem, she davened for Hashem. That what we know that that one part of the process of the sota is that the water, the name of Hashem is erased in the water, and we say, you know, it's worth it for the peace between husband and wife. But what she was saying was, when it says Vatisbala Hashem, she davened on behalf of Hashem, I don't want to have your name erased in the waters of the sota, and therefore just give me a child so I don't have to resort to becoming a sota. That's Vatisbala al Hashem, and she davened on behalf of Hashem that his name not need to be erased. The Gemara goes through each step of this verse of Yud Aleph, and it says that here she mentions Va'ani Amosecha. She says the suffering of your maidservant, and don't forget your maidservant, and give to your maidservant a seed. And the Gemara wonders why she keeps repeating this word Amosecha, your maidservant. So the Gemara says, Shalosh Amosos Halalu Lama. Why does she mention it three times? Amr Chana L'Knei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chana was saying to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Shlosha Bidkei Misa Barasa Ba'isha. You created three didke, like check things that check a person for whether they deserve misa, whether they deserve to die. The Gemara is darshing the word amas, like from the word mate. The Gemara is saying that she was saying something related to misa, to death, and she was pointing out that there are three things that bring about death to a woman, or three situations where a woman is more subject to die, and that is susceptible to death. And that is Elohei Nida V'chala V'adoka Samer, that if she's not careful about the laws of Nida, the laws of a woman's menstruation cycle, her spiritual ritual impurity, the chala and the mitzvah of chala, separating out chala from the dough, v'adlaka saner and lighting candles. Right? The Gemara in Shabbos brings numerous comments about this. It says, we say this on Friday night, it brings a braisa, ashala, shaveirush, nashim, mezos, bishas, leidasan. There are three things that can bring about a woman to die in childbirth, and different ways of saying it, but basically, right, also says it like this, that there are three things that check a woman, which what really means is that that when a woman is in a dangerous situation, like childbirth, or she's walking on the edge of a cliff, or any of these things, so this is bodek her. We're bodek her. We check her based on whether she, you know, does she deserve to be saved. We check, Hashem checks on these three mitzvot, whether she was careful about Nida, Chala, and Hadalaka Saner. And Chana was saying, Kuma varti al achas mehem, did I transgress any of them? I was very careful about all of these mitzvot, and therefore, as a result, right, that since these are things that a woman is checked at the time that she gives birth, that she's checked if she's following these mitzvot, and you know, perhaps she says that's why I haven't had a child, is that I wouldn't have to be put in this situation. But the truth is that I never transgressed any of them, and it won't be a danger for me, and therefore, give me a child, and I will survive, because I'm very careful about these mitzvot. The Mefarshim also points out that these mitzvot they're part of Chana's name. Chana, Chala, the Nun is for Nida, and the He is for Hadlaka Saner. That she excelled in these three mitzvot, and she wanted them to be a merit for her to have a child. Then she goes on and she says, "V'nasata la'amasa zera anashim," and you should give to your maidservant the seed of man. And this is a lot said about this. What was she davening for? What was she asking for here? So on a simple level, Rashi says, Zera Anashim, Tzadikim. Anashim means Tzadikim, right? Like we just had in last week's Parsha, Parsha Shvach, Kulam Anashim, they were all men, they were all righteous. Others say it means just male. She asked for a male child, Zera Anashim, she wanted a son. The Gemara mentioned some of these Shatim. Among the things that the Gemara says is one thing that she davened for was Zeresh Ashakul Kishnei Anashim, a seed that equal to, like, two men. Which two men? Uman Ninhu. Which two men, the Gemara says? Moshe V'Aaron. A seed, a child that's on the level of Moshe and Aaron. And it quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, which we say in Kabbalah Shabbos, Moshe ve'Aaron v'Chohanav u'Shmuel b'Kari Shemo. That puts Moshe and Aaron and Shmuel all in the same sentence, as if Shmuel reached the level of Moshe and Aaron. In fact, that also was related to last week's Parsha, that was what caused Korach to err. Korach saw that he would have a descendant, Shmuel. a descendant of Korah, and the Sabra HaKodesh, you would have this great descendant, and that he therefore assumed that he was going to survive. And in fact, he was mistaken. It wasn't him that would survive his fight. It would be his sons, because they would do teshuva. Then the Gemara brings another interpretation, and this is the one that I want to focus on for a little bit. The Gemara says, Rabbanan Amri, Zera Anakim. What was he davening for? Zera Anakim, the seed of men. Zera Temuvla Bein Anakim. A seed that would be absorbed among people. What does that mean? So the Gemara elaborates. The Asur of Dini Amar, when Rav Dini came, he explained, Lo Aruch Velo Gut, not too tall, not too short. Lo Katan Velo Alam, not too skinny, and not too fat. Lo Tachor Velo Gichor, not red, not white. Lo Chacham Velo Tipesh, not wise, not dumb. Rather, he davened for a child who would be average. So, why would she do that? You know, why wouldn't she daven for a chacham, you know, a wise son? Why would she daven for someone who's average? So Rashi says, lo chacham yoser midai, not too wise. So lo yeh tema be'enei abriyot, he shouldn't be tamia, wonderment in the eyes of people. People are talking about him, then it will cast the ayin hara, the evil eye, upon him, and he'll something bad will happen to him as a result of everybody talking about him and praising him. It will give him an ayin hara. The Yavit, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, says that he was specifically davening for this when he was a child. You know, a wise child prodigy. You know, that stands out. When he's older, it wouldn't stand out so much. But as a child, for him to be exceptionally wise would stand out. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says he didn't get her wish. We're going to see another, you know, not this week, but hopefully next time we learn that. He, at the young, ripe age of, I think, 2 years old, he already knew halacha, and he passed in the halacha in front of Eli, the Kohen Gadol, and that's going to be, you know, subject to great discussion in the Gemara. But already at 2 years old, he was an exceptional child. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Emden says. But others say no, they look past that little story, and they look at a later pasuk where it says that she got what she asked for, and the implication is that her tefillos were answered exactly as she davened for, and that she ended up as she had asked for with this child who was average, as she had requested. So you see from here, the Bali Muster bring out a very important lesson from that. Shmuel HaNavi, if you understand like that she davened for him to be average, and indeed she got, as the pasuk described, she got her tefillah answered, and he was average. And look what he became. He was born average. He was born just like you and me, and Ezra Chaim Shmulevitz, you see what a person can become with hard work and dedication. Even a person who's just of average intelligence, of average skill, of average size, but if a person works on himself and works on his nidos and works on connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, connecting to God, so a person can grow to be as great as Shmuel HaNavi, who also was just born average. The Iyun Yaakov suggests that the reason why she davened for him to be average is because often if a person excels in a certain area, so that could create difficulties for them, challenges. They, you know, so he references Shimshon with his strength. Shimshon, the Gemara says that his strength was his own downfall. Maybe it was his arrogance as a result. Shaul HaMelech, it says, Bitzavaro, his neck, he was very tall and handsome. I guess what this Gemara is saying, I didn't look it up, is that because Shimshon actually used his strength to kill himself in the end, Shaul also fell on his sword. I don't remember if it went through his neck or through his ribs, but I think at a basic level what the Gemara is saying is these things caused arrogance and caused their downfall. Rashi actually, they bring in Rashi in parentheses, a reference also that a person who's too wise can also, they can reject, you know, Emuna and HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a result. Rashi references Elisha, who was Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, who was one of the great Tanayim, who left the path, and Rashi seems to be attributing it to Rov Chachmaso, his great wisdom, caused him to think he was too smart to subject himself to a god and to a Torah, put himself above that, above that. And I think I've seen that in people. I've seen a person who was too smart for, there's no room for a Torah in his life because he was too smart for it. And that was at least my interpretation of why this person decided to reject a certain person I know. So that could be a challenge also. So that's what the Yom Yaakov says. That's why she dove in terms of just the average, so you wouldn't have these challenges. The Yom Yaakov, I'll just share with you one idea, which I can't tell you much about because it's just above my pay grade, but it was fascinating, so I'll just share it. The Yom Yaakov brings from the Chesed of Avram that before a person is created, he is asked whether he wants to be tall or short, weak or strong, and whatever he answers to God, that's what you get. Like the person, the neshama has a choice before being put into the world as to what capacities they're going to have, physical, intellectual, etc. So he says, so then you'll ask me, why would anybody choose the worst one? Why would anybody choose to be weak or to be, not as wise? So he says, because whatever you choose to be in this world, in your first go-around, after the resurrection, after Tzias HaMesim, you're going to be the opposite. So, whatever you choose to be now, you're going to be the opposite after Tzias HaMesim. So he says, that's why Chana Davin, that Shmuel should just be average. Because if you're average, what's that? It's a good question. Maybe she was davening that he should choose to be that. But that's a good question. Yeah, I can't tell you much about this. It's just fascinating to me, so I wanted to share it. And so she davened that he be average, because I guess if you're average, then you'll be average all the way through, both before Tzias HaMesim and after Tzias HaMesim. That is what the Yom Yaakov brings from the Chesed of Avraham. Okay. The Sefer Chesed LaAbraham. That's what he says. Okay. Chana continues and she says, Unisativ LaHashem Kol Yemei Chayo. And I will give him to Hashem all the days of his life. Umora Lo Yale Al Rosho. And the Mora will not go upon his head. So what's Mora? So this is actually a machlokes in the Mishnah. Whether she meant a razor, and she meant that he'll never get a haircut because he'll be a Nazir, or was she just saying Mora fear? Fear of man should, will never be, she was having that fear of man should never be upon his head. The Radak quotes it. It has the same language by Simson, and there it certainly means a razor. So the Gemara says, Rav Norai Omer Nazir Haya Shmuel. Rav Norai says that Shmuel was indeed a Nazir, and he was promising that he would never have his hair cut. Shenemar Mara Loyala Rosa. And he learns it from Shimshon, just like there it meant a razor, so too here. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, Mora here means Mora Basar Bat Vadam, fear of, it means fear, and it means the fear of man should not be upon him. And they have a little back and forth, but that's the Mafokas. The Targum over here takes the side that it means fear. The Targum here says, Marvas Enosh Ra Tehei Aloi, the fear of man should not be upon him. But, you know, there's one approach, definitely, that he was a Nazir, that Shmuel HaNavi was a Nazir. Now, the Radak is very, very bothered by this, that she, as the mother, could dedicate her son to be a Nazir for his whole life. The Radak says, So the Radak points to two issues. That's a good question. So she had already davened according to one step that it be a male. She said Dara Anashim, which the Radak says means Zafarim, males. And the fact that she said Mora lo yale al rosho, on his head, she's definitely expecting it to be, whether it means rage or whether it means fear, she's definitely expecting a male. Not to mention just the idea, if she's really, right, okay. And somewhere here, he asks a few questions. Oh, here it is. Okay, I was looking at the wrong place. So, no, not here. Okay, let me borrow this a second. Let's bring it here. So the Radak says as follows. Eichal nidra albina deyia nazir. How could her neder, her oath, take effect that her child be a nazir? The oath, and furthermore, he wasn't ba'olam. And even if he was, we have a Mishnah that says ha'ish madir es b'no nazir. Ha'isha. A man can make his son a nazir, but a woman can't. Vein ha'isha madir es b'no nazir. So he says maybe you'll say that Elkanah, after she said that he would be a nazir, Elkanah, her husband, the father, affirmed it. He says we don't see this. Zelo ro'inu. How could the Gemara leave out the primary nether, which would have been Elkanah's, and just write Chana's nether, which really wasn't a nether, which didn't do anything? So, the Radak has, doesn't understand this approach that she was making him into a Nazir. She doesn't know how that would work. So many, many Mefarshim try to answer how it would work. And some of them kind of ignore what the Radak said. Some of them say, because Elkanah affirmed it, even though the Radak rejected that. Some say he didn't affirm it, but he heard it and he was silent. And by being silent, that was an affirmation itself. It's hard to hear because he doesn't seem to be here right now when she's saying it, unless she said it again. And she's saying it quietly, because we know, we'll see that she's davening quietly. So, it's a hard approach. One interesting idea that they bring down over here from the Netziv in Merome Sadeh. The Netziv says at the end of the Masechet Nazir that really he wasn't taking an oath on his behalf. This neder was not going to make Shmuel into a Nazir on its own. So what was it accomplishing? Her intent was that if she would take such an oath, then Shmuel, when he grew older, would also just affirm himself, take the oath and affirm it. He wants to compare it. He says maybe it's similar to an idea that we see in the Rambam in Hilchos Erechin, that if a person is makdish something, someone dedicates, sanctifies something for the Beis HaMikdash, for the temple, but it's lo bo le'olam, it's not yet in the world, so it doesn't take effect. You say, you know, the animal that will be born should be, they actually have to distinguish, I think Kedushas Agus maybe does take effect. If you say, you know, the money that I'm going to earn after I, you know, do this job, that money the fruit that I'm going to, that grow from this tree, should be dedicated, their value to the temple, so it doesn't take effect, because it's lo bo le'olam. However, the Rambam paskin that if he says, I will be makdish it, I'm going to sanctify it, I'm going to dedicate it, so then, once it comes into the world, he is obligated to then dedicate it, to sanctify it. And if he doesn't, he actually transgresses a bal ta'ach, he transgresses lo yachal devaro, he transgresses the prohibitions of not keeping his word. So, he if he said, I'm going to sanctify it, then he then is obligated to be makdish. Actually, I think about it, isn't so surprising. He said that he's going to do it. But the Netziv wants to suggest that maybe you could compare that to over here, where it wasn't actually Shmuel, but what Chana was basically saying is that I'm going to dedicate him. Now, he would have to do the actual dedicating. He would have to, you know, to take the oath to be a Nazir himself, but she was saying that I'm going to put him on this path, and indeed her oath did not take effect, the Netziv is saying, but that Shmuel was expected to affirm it, and he did, according to this. Now, we don't see again, it would be kind of, you know, we don't see it in the verses, we don't see anywhere that he did affirm it, so it's hard to know, but that's the suggestion of the Netziv. Okay, let's keep going. Pasuk Yud Beis. V'haya ki hir b'sa l'hispah el l'ifnei Hashem. And it was when she continued to daven in front of Hashem, the Eli shomeres piha. And Eli was guarding her mouth. So that means that she davened a lot, and Eli was watching her, waiting for her to finish. V'chana hi medaberes aliba, and Chana, she was speaking on her heart. Rak sifaseh anot, only her lips were moving. V'kola lo yishameya, and her voice was not heard. By Yachzevel, Eli was shikora, and Eli thought that she was drunk. So what does it mean she was midaberes aliba? She was speaking on her heart. So it could just be another way of saying that she was davening quietly. Although then it goes on to say that she was kola lo yishameya. That would be a little bit redundant, but that's how some learn. That she was midaberes aliba, she was speaking on her heart, she was quiet. It could mean that she was having a lot of kavana. The Gemara we mentioned last week says that what she was saying was that Hashem you created all of a person's body parts, all of a person's limbs, for a purpose, and including a woman's breasts have a purpose. They're meant to nurse a child. And she was medaberes al liba. She was davening about her heart, about her chest, her breasts, that they should have a child to nurse. There are those who point out that not anyone can just daven. You know, why can't any woman who is childless say that? What was the special claim of Hannah more than any other barren woman? Is that a fair tefila that any woman can say, listen, Hashem, you created me with breasts and nurse a child. Why haven't you given me a child? So the Mefarshim say that only someone who actually has used every limb in order to serve Hashem and is completely dedicated to serving Hashem with every facet of their existence, every part of their body, so that's a person who can say, you created eyes. I'm very careful with what I look at. You created my mouth. I'm very careful what I say. I don't speak Lashon Hara. I use my mouth for good things, for tefillah and for Torah and for chesed. And I use my arms and legs for mitzvot. Only such a person can make a claim that every part of my body was given to you to serve, was given to me to serve you, and I dedicate every part of my, every fiber of my existence to serving you. And therefore, Hashem, if you've given me breasts, then surely you should give me a child that I can nurse, that I can develop and raise to be a servant of Hashem. So it's not a claim that any woman can make. Someone who has really dedicated every part of their body to service of Hashem, that's the first thing who can make such a claim, make such a tefillah. So, Vayachshevel Eli l'shikora. Eli thought that she was drunk. Rashi says because they didn't normally daven quietly. So the Gemara that we're going to get into next week is going to learn a number of halachos of tefillah from Chana. How is a person supposed to daven Shmona Esrei? The Gemara says, "Kama hilchasa gavrasa ikka l'mishma mehani kreidechana." How many important halachos can we learn from these psukim about Chana? And then the Gemara gets into them, and it says first from here, "V'chana himidaberes aliba," and Chana was speaking on her heart, "Mikan." From here we learn that a person who's davening has to have kavana. So the Gemara takes the approach that midaberes aliba means with kavana. And then it says, rak tifasel na'ot, mikan la'misfal sheyachtos bisfasav. From here we learn, right, it says only her lips were moving. We learn that when you daven, you have to move your lips. The kolo lo yishameya, and her voice wasn't heard. Mikan sha'asr lehagbiya kolo b'tfilaso. From here we learn that it's forbidden for one to raise their voice when they're davening. And we're talking about tzmonas, we're talking about the amida here. All these things. You have to move your lips, you have to have kavana, and you can't raise your voice. Vayachshevela eli l'shikarang, eli thought she was drunk. We learn from there that someone who's drunk is not allowed to daven. So, the question that should immediately jump out at us is that if indeed we learn from here that you're supposed to daven quietly, because Chana davened quietly, so then why did Eli think that she was drunk because he saw her davening quietly? That's apparently the proper way to daven. Why did Eli think that she was drunk? So, that's true. But what did she do that made him think that she was drunk?
Her lips were moving, but couldn't hear it.
But that's how you're supposed to daven, the Gemara is telling you. We learned from Chana how to daven.
She didn't know that then.
Kind of knew it, but Ailey didn't?
Yes. I don't think that they had that style about them. I'm not saying that it's...
So then how can we learn...
It,
no, so then how can we learn that that's the right way to daven? If that wasn't the... What? Either way, what, right? Either that wasn't the normal way to daven, so why would we learn from there that that is the right way to daven? The right way to daven is what people do, not the way that Chana did.
If you didn't have another yet to say that the presence of the lips would suffice, that idea
wasn't bringing korban the primary way of, like, davening, really? Like, that acts with, like, your prayer?
I mean...
Now they say it's the reverse. Your prayers are, like...
You're right, but it seems
so
that...
So probably she was, like, had her eyes closed and was, like, you know, was, like, mouthing. Probably
I mean,
that she was drunk.
I mean, we have many instances of prayer in the Torah, right? We have,
No, I know. Right? I'm just saying in this instance where they're in the... Not the Beit HaMikdash, but, like, the...
In the Mishkan, yeah.
Right. So, like, that's primarily, like, where...
So you're saying it's the location was surprising.
Right.
Why
so
is she davening here? This isn't where you daven.
Drunk people look
weird. I don't know. I think that karbanos would be accompanied by tefillah. That's definitely the implication of the of the mefarshim.
No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying. But if her lips are moving, you can't hear. And it sounds like drunk people.
But I
want
to know:
really
is that the normal way to daven or not? So you're saying that it wasn't the normal way to daven, and that's why. And so she was doing something out of the ordinary. And that's why Ailey thought she was drunk. And that's what Rashi says. Rashi says that it wasn't normal for them to daven quietly. So, but again, then why does the Gemara learn that that's how you daven if that wasn't the normal way to daven? Why all of a sudden, Kechana did it, so now everyone should do it that way. Why? Which one is it? Was
it had a powerful effect.
What's that?
It was effective.
Ah, so you're saying it worked. So now from now on...
Take that as a precedent. And now from now on, that's what we do.
Okay, I mean, there should be a Torah, you know, the normal way that the Torah... I mean, whatever the way to daven is the way to daven. Like, I don't think that it would change because it worked once. You know, and then if somebody davens out loud and it works, so we'll switch it back. Like...
No, but this particular instance, like, was a very powerful moment in Jewish history, so I think it stands out, you know, like, enough that it's not just a one-time thing.
Okay.
Becomes the,
right. I don't think that we would establish a halacha based on because it worked. I think that, you know, it's possible that for some reason there was a prophecy now to change the way that you daven, but I wouldn't assume that I wouldn't think that it would change because it was effective. So we have a number of different possible ways to reconcile this Ailey versus Chana. So the Marsha here says that he rejects Rashi. Rashi said that they didn't normally daven quietly. Marsha says, doesn't seem right from this sugya, because we're learning from here that you're not allowed to daven out loud. And why would he have thought she was drunk? So he says, the reason why he thought she was drunk was because she was davening so much. Because here Basal is Balel. And apparently, that wasn't, you know... we're going to see that for whatever reason, I mean, we'll give a little bit more meaning to this. I don't know if we'll have time today, but I don't even know what time we're going to now. But what time did we start? Mm-hmm. I have 5 more minutes. But it was because she was davening so much, which we have to see why that was a problem. Because she davened so much, that's why he thought she was drunk, and that's the Marsha said. Now the problem is that it's pretty clear in the pasuk that he thought she was drunk because she was davening quietly. The pasuk says, Chana was speaking on her heart, only her lips were moving, her voice wasn't heard, and Ailey thought she was drunk. it seems that the reason he thought she was drunk was because she was davening quietly. So the Mishnah had a suggestion for how the Marsha would read the Pasuk, that the Marsha would understand that since Eli didn't hear her, and he didn't hear her request, so he didn't realize how great her pain was and how difficult her situation was. And he didn't understand why she would be davening and crying so much. And so therefore, since she was davening so much, he thought she was drunk. So the way that the Marsha, according to this, would read the Pasuk is that because she davened so much, and she was quiet, he didn't know why she was davening. He didn't know what she was davening, what it was all about. Therefore, he thought she was drunk. He didn't know why she was davening so much. Right, you can kind of imagine the situation, I guess, if you, like, if you ever see a drunk person daven, like, they're pretty passionate, you know, and they might daven for a reason. Usually not, they usually don't have the attention span to daven for so long, but they might. They might daven, you know, and cry, and right. So you can imagine the situation where she's just davening and crying, and really, and as you mentioned, they had just been eating and drinking, and you know, it was Yantif, it was Rosh Hashanah, and according to many, some people Shavuot, but so it would make sense that they would have been celebrating and she could have been drunk. So what would be wrong, what would be the problem with davening for so long? So the Malbim has an approach here. It doesn't necessarily... the Malbim says... actually, you know what? We're going to save the Malbim for next time, because I think people are finishing up. And maybe we'll hold it here. It's a little bit of a long piece. All right.